He's a former pro, an SEC analyst, and a damn good dog. Matt Stinchcomb is only on the College Football Voice of the South. Presented by Georgia's Own Credit Union, Cigna, Engineered Solutions of Georgia, and ASW Distillery.
As he has all season long, joining us on the Loud Security Systems Newsmaker line, the College Football Hall of Famer, Matt Stinchcomb. Matt, we'll talk about the targeting call in just a second, but when they're down 10, LSU, what's going through your head at that point?
I wasn't worried for LSU at that point, that's for sure. Especially when you look at the way that Clemson was winning the field position battle early on, and the first five possessions, Clemson was only able to get 10 points out of it. And so, yeah, LSU wasn't scoring. You know, Clemson wasn't taking advantage of the window that was afforded them early in that football game. And because of that, and because of the way the LSU defense was able to answer, especially with some short fields early on, you know, Clemson drives inside the 25-yard line on their opening possession. They settle for a field position punt play. You know, you end up saying, you know, we'll just pin you back. We're not going to swing for a field goal, and we're certainly not going to be able to capitalize in the end zone. Let's play field position. Now, granted, that ended up working out because it flipped the field. But the thing of it is that Clemson had a window. They had a window early on, and they were an offense that needed to capitalize on it because you had to think that LSU offensively, the type of year that they had, and Joe Burrow started kind of shakily, it wasn't going to last. It was just a matter of time before they were able to figure out what it is that Clemson's plan was, which clearly was to pressure Joe Burrow. They were able to come up with an answer, and they made the plays. Joe Burrow makes that offense work, guys. We've talked about how much better LSU's offense is this year. There's no denying that. And Joe Brady has certainly had a phenomenal influence on Steve Ensminger and his offense. But Joe Burrow is what makes it go. A lot of times he would make the play caller right after the fact. Things would break down. He would extend plays. He would scramble. You hit a QB draw on a third down where you're thinking just pick up some yards maybe and then rush the field goal unit on after you took a timeout. No, I mean, the guy picks up the first down and you end up in the end zone. He's the difference maker for that LSU offense, and you knew it was just a matter of time before they climbed back into it.
Hey, Matt, I know you have family, so you might not have the time or even the interest, but if somebody actually did some comparisons, are you a guy who wants to feel strongly about the idea, was this the best college football season ever? I know there's subjectivity and objectivity. Is this the best team season that college football has ever seen? If somebody did the work for you, I'm not asking you to pop in tape, but are you interested in formulating your own opinion on that if you had some information in front of you?
Not really. And the reason for that is I think, you know, each season kind of lives its own life. And that's the beauty of college football, I think, is that there aren't many dynasties. It's part of the reason why you kind of have to marvel at what Alabama built, what, you know, Clemson has, you know, somewhat approximated with what they've done, with, you know, what the Nebraska teams were of the 90s, what Miami was able to do on two different occasions. You know, you reach far enough back and you start talking about Notre Dame. It's, I think those eras kind of live lives of their own. There's the BCS era, right? Now you could call it maybe a college football playoff era, depending on how long this model persists in its current format. But to say this one season trumps all the other great teams from their respective seasons, it's just really hard to do. I don't think it's necessary. It's fun to talk about. I don't know that you could ever actually arrive at a season where you said, you know what, this is about as good as it gets. 2011, LSU did something pretty remarkable. I think it was four teams that they ended up beating in the top 10 or something crazy, and they ended up getting stuffed in the national championship game. This season's different in that they were able to not only win, but win decisively. Does that make them the best team in college football history? I don't think so. We're such an offensive-minded sport, though, now, that the type of year that Joe Burrow put together at quarterback, I think, lends itself to our mindset that would say, you know what, this is the best team ever.
I don't know if that's true. Yeah, I'm not looking to sway you, but maybe if the verbiage is different, is it the best season ever for a college football team? You beat preseason 1, 2, 3, and 4. You win the Heisman, you win the Biletnikoff, you win the Thorpe, you set an all-time scoring record. You, if you don't want to declare them the best, can you maybe claim it's the best season a team has ever had when you look at the 7 top 10 wins to cap it all off?
Yeah, I could. If I put a lot of weight in preseason rankings, which I put zero weight in preseason rankings, then I guess that could be impressive. And there's probably a couple of qualifiers you're throwing in there. As far as the awards are concerned, it's great. I think we all know, though, there is a certain level of laziness in award season where it just so happens you're on the best team in the country and, oh, your players are better than any of the other players. Maybe. You know, I'm not going to quibble with Ja'Marr Chase. Certainly not going to quibble with Joe Burrow. You know, Grant Delpit was a lot better last year than he was this year. I think that was almost a makeup award that he was given defensively. Take nothing away from the kid. He's a good player. He had a much better season a season ago. But there's no doubt this was a remarkable run for LSU. I think it was probably, at least in my awareness, since I've been paying close attention to it, it was the best season I've seen a quarterback have ever.
Matt Stinchcomb
put together a year I've never seen before.
Yeah, I don't think you're alone. The numbers do speak for themselves in that regard. Matt Stinchcomb with us on the Loud Security Systems Newsmaker line. Then there's the tale of Ed Ogeron, who says nothing's really going to change in his life. And while a lot of times you would say that's lip service, I believe him. I think he's a basic Louisiana guy who's going to do what he's always done.
Yeah, no, I don't see that guy making some, you know, drastic life change. Did somebody ask him? Like, are you going to go run out and buy a yacht?
Well, so, you know, it's funny. He made a statement. Him and his family were going to go eat ham sandwiches, and it was like ham sandwiches. And I asked Nick, 6 months from now, if I go to his house, would I physically be able to see that he made more money than he thought he was going to make?
Maybe he gets
$2 million in bonuses.
Maybe his dream car is a 63 Corvette Stingray, and he has that in his garage.
Or is it a green egg on the patio?
Hey, you know, small moves, you know, just make a few small moves. But we do know this, that contract's changing. I mean, LSU has been, as we've learned over the years, and when the hire was made, and many people questioned it, me included, because you're going, defensive line coach. This guy's a defensive line coach. Yeah, he's had some head coaching experience. It hasn't gone great. You had to question it. I don't know how you couldn't question it. And everybody that's kind of crowing, oh, I'll see what happened now, they're lying if they didn't think inside. They wanted it to be the right hire. There's no way that they had supreme confidence that it was the right hire. He's proven this year anyway, that he was the right fit, that he was the right man for the job for right now. And I'll be interested to see how long he's able to run, because he's saying now, and he said it often, you know, we're just getting started. He might be right.
Do you think the ejection part of targeting will be changed?
I don't know, you know, and I don't know if that one troubles me more than the blindside block rule that I've seen several times this year where I'm going, this has got to be revisited. You know, last night there was a blindside block, yep. The receiver running downfield, and the defender, yes, was he looking for the block? No, but was it within his field of vision? Absolutely. It should, and that should be introduced into that rule. The ejection for the targeting rule, I don't know if there's a way to introduce, and I haven't thought it through enough to say, is there a way to make it to where if there's obvious intent, but gosh, you just get super right. Subjective after a while. That was the one good thing I felt like this year, as they said, look, that they were more consistent. Now, with that consistency, I think came some ejections where I'm going, come on, guys. I mean, last night with the Clemson kid, That rule with him lowering his head, that's to protect him. That's not necessarily to protect the guy who's getting hit. It's the guy who's doing the hitting. And you're talking about, they always said it. We played sports. You see it in the locker rooms. If you play football, see what you hit. Heads up is what they used to call it, heads up. Well, you want to have your head up. You duck that head and you can injure yourself pretty significantly, pretty seriously. And I get why the rule is there. It's a box play. You know, there's traffic. Guy's scrambling. He's going to the ground. You know, you're trying to put a good lick on a guy. I
hate it.
The ejection piece of it. I'll tell you the other part that drives me nuts, and this has got to fix, is the perp walk that they make these kids take if they are ejected, mm-hmm. where they are escorted off the field and into the locker room. Why is that necessary? It's not as if you get thrown out of the game, say that persists, it's not like the kid committed a crime. It's not like there was assault. He committed a penalty. He can't play anymore. Why does he have to leave the sideline? That seems way, way too extreme, considering what goes on in these games.
Based upon what I've heard him say all year and last night, I kind of joked, he basically thanked the lunch ladies and lunch men in the training room facility. You know, he thanked everybody, Joe Burrow. as an offensive lineman or as a guy who played in the NFL, but an offensive lineman, defensive lineman, the big guys who don't necessarily hang around with the glory guys. I do think there's separation of church and state in locker rooms. What do you think he needs to do? Now, Chipper, God bless him, he laughs. You drive a brand-new Corvette when you're the number one pick into a minor league stadium, you know what you're going to get hit? You're going to get hit 19 times over the course of a short minor league run because people just say that's what's going to happen. I don't think he needs it, but what do you think, how should he handle walking into a deal with grown-ass men with the expectation he has on him?
I don't think that Joe Burrow, the kid's confident. There's no two ways about it. And what we call swag and all this other business. But I think he gets it. I do think he'll get his place in the world, even as what has to be a number one overall pick, right? Has there been a greater lock ever? I think he'll understand how he fits into the world of an NFL locker room. You just get that impression based on the things that you just said. The fact that the first thing foremost, Heisman Trophy speech, talks about his offensive front, who those guys, a lot to ask of them, and they don't always hold up great, and he, makes it work. He, I think, gets the fact that, yeah, man, you're a great football player. Yes, you went number one overall. But if anybody understands that you do have to earn it, I think it'd be a guy like Joe Burrow. Look at his background, right? They keep saying he's a two-star. The guy was a four-star. It wasn't like he was a scrub. He got passed over by Nebraska, ended up at Ohio State.
Do you believe him when he says
Shippensburg, but the kid had to earn his way in.
Do you believe him when he says that all he wanted, all he thought about was holding that championship trophy? He said he didn't think about an NFL career. He said the only thing that he thought about was holding that national championship trophy.
I believe him. I do believe him. Yeah, especially, and I think his background lends itself to that narrative as well, and that it would be more than just a cool story and the right thing to say in public. It's not a humble brag. It's not a backdoor way of acting like, I really don't care about the Heisman. Of course you care about the Heisman, but all I'm thinking about is the national championship. I do believe him when he says that, and it did look like the guy had a singular purpose. They did a good job in the broadcast last night pointing out, to say that he's like a coach on the field, that almost captures it, but it's been spoken about a little bit this year. The kid's basically majoring in football. He's taken a couple of classes online. He lives in Baton Rouge, and he plays football. And it worked out phenomenally well for him, given the system that was brought to him.
The Cincinnati Bengals would really have to screw this up to screw him up. I'm not telling you they're not capable.
They can, though.
Yeah,
they
absolutely exactly.
Anybody can.
Yeah, they can. Not just to them. A lot of folks where – You look at like a Drew Brees, and I think Joe Burrow, obviously, I'm not saying same skill set or any of those things, but a lot of it is, does the system fit? Will the kid be comfortable? Can he operate with that? Look at the Chicago Bears this year and Mitch Trubisky, and who knows if he ever becomes anything. But Drew Brees gets, basically let go. They weren't going to build their program or franchise, rather, around him in San Diego with the Chargers. He just couldn't quite get it done, that Brees kid. Just doesn't have it in him. And then you stick him in New Orleans, and the kid's he is one of the best quarterbacks in history. And it's not just the Bengals. It could be any of these teams where if the system doesn't mesh with what Joe Burrow can do, Joe Burrow was just a guy last year. He was just kind of a guy. Maybe it was just experience with his receivers. Maybe it was system. Maybe it was play calling. It could be a lot of things. I think it's a good bit more fragile then I think we give it credit for. And I think he's a lock for number one and should be. But the idea that he would just enjoy success no matter where they plop him is, I think, a foolish perspective on what could shake out. The Bengals could screw it up, and so could the other 31 teams.
Finishing up with Matt Stinchcomb. He's with us on the Loud Security Systems Newsmaker line. Matt, before we let you go, your thoughts on Jamie Newman going to Georgia?
Well, I think, given the scenario, and you look at the attrition across the offensive front, and then Jake Fromm making the decision to go to the NFL after the stability that he brought, not only stability, but the quality of play. And you're going to be replacing all those faces up front to have a guy that's proven to be a true dual threat, capable, more than capable, actually, a really good quarterback in the ACC, and take that for what it's worth and consider that context. The fact that Newman does have the mobility to extend, to do the things that Joe Burrow was able to do the other night. I think that that's going to prove pivotal, especially as Georgia tries to reload up front. And it'll be fascinating to see, going back to our system conversation, how does Georgia adapt? How much do they morph to accommodate and capitalize on the different skill set that Newman brings to that position?
All right, Matt, listen, we enjoyed it all season long. Enjoy some time to unwind. Before you know it, next year we'll be here. Football season right around the corner, it seems, even though it just ended.
Yeah, but hey, guys, I had fun this year. Thanks for having me on.
Appreciate it, Matt, very much. Thank you.
Matt Stinchcomb, the College Football Hall of Famer, with us all season long on the Loud Security Systems Newsmaker line.